A blazing purple halo divides to become two glowing orbs, one yellow and one lilac. In bold white capital letters, in tandem. Mounted on stands in front of an upright light box, red shapes form the Film 4 logo. UK Film Council, awarding funds from the National Lottery. In Tandem Films, Film 4 and the UK Film Council, in association with Aramid Entertainment, present a Stephen Woolley Elizabeth Carlson No. 9 Films production. In association with Audley Films, a film by Robert Wide. A young blonde boy sits cross-legged in front of a large wooden TV set.
Supposing Queen Elizabeth had been misguided enough to marry an English commoner, Janet.
On screen, in black and white,
I'm sorry, Miss Fox, I didn't quite hear.
Obviously, you are immersed in problems of far greater significance than Elizabeth's foreign policy. But these mental...
When I was a kid, I used to think there was a special place where all the movie stars lived. A kind of Shangri-La. And if you could just get inside there, you'd be happy. Forever.
Seated guests clap as a movie clip plays at an awards ceremony.
All these years later, I'm finally inside. I've made it to Shangri-La. My name's Sidney Young. I'm a celebrity correspondent, a journalist, a friend to the stars.
A man.
Yeah, that isn't me.
Seated nearby.
This is me at the Apollo Film Awards in LA this year. That's my Armani tuxedo. That's an Omega Speedmaster Pro watch I'm wearing. That's the actress Sophie Mays. Last night, she told me she'd let me have sex with her if she won the Best Actress award.
Sophie is slender and beautiful. A woman on stage reads her name.
Oh, she just won the Best Actress award.
Seated beside a gobsmacked Sophie, Sydney cracks a wide smile and claps. Shapely, raven-haired Sophie rises from her seat. Sydney turns to the camera.
My life didn't used to be like this.
A smartly dressed man and woman rise from a nearby table. Behind them, double doors swing open, revealing blinding white light. Stars process down a red carpet at the BAFTA Awards in London. Fans take camera phone pictures of Ricky Gervais.
Only a year ago, my alternative magazine, the Postmodern Review, was on the ropes. I needed a big celebrity scoop to save me from bankruptcy and humiliation.
Sydney stands at a red rope barrier.
But there was just one problem. To cross the thin red line that separates the looky-loos from the stars, you had to be famous.
Babe 3,
yeah.
He has a pig on a lead.
He hasn't got any ID.
How many pigs are coming tonight? What do you mean, leave him here with you? Because I can't.
No, that's fine.
I'll leave him here with
no,
you.
No, you cannot leave him here. I've got to...
She looks around nervously.
Oh. If you're positive, you're supposed to.
He grins as she lifts the barrier.
Well, well. Oh. Sydney Young.
Well, well, clipboard Nazi-type woman.
The pig doesn't get in.
Bouncers lead Sydney and the pig away.
Plan B. If you couldn't crash the award ceremonies, you had to get into one of the after-show parties.
The Haymarket Hotel.
Of these, the most exclusive was the Sharps Magazine Party, hosted by legendary editor Clayton Hardy. Here, the A-list could finally relax, safe in the knowledge that no looky-loo would be desperate enough to book a room in one of London's most expensive hotels just to get close to them.
Sydney's dressed as a waiter with a fake moustache.
OK, Brittany, I want you in bed by 10 o'clock, OK?
And no porn.
Brittany wags her curly tail. Sydney tosses her a canapé and she snaffles it down. Sydney peers out from behind a door marked staff only, then, obscuring his face with a tray of canapés, he saunters into the party past the Nazi clipboard woman. He sits by a pool, chatting with Tandy Newton.
When I'm in LA, I like to stay at the Chateau. Where else? And then when I'm in London, I always like to stay here at the Haymarket. Because, mm-hmm. You know, it's got to the point now when I don't feel at home unless I'm in a hotel. Do you know what I mean?
What is it that you do?
I'm a writer. I'm a movie writer.
Oh, great.
The brown-haired hotel manager knocks on Sydney's room door.
Hello? Sir? Is everything all right?
He enters to find that the room has been trashed. Chocolates and booze bottles litter the floor by the open fridge, and upturned furniture is strewn about the room. Unseen, Brittany trots out of the hotel room and scurries down a corridor into a lift. The electric doors close. By the pool with beautiful Tandy Newton.
And it is weird that I should see you, because I was talking to the producer like last week and I was saying, you know, Tandy Newton, lead role, what do you reckon?
Yeah.
I'm serious, yeah, because you have the intelligence and the beauty and the fragility that I think we're looking for.
Tandy smiles coyly.
What's the film?
It's called Tits of Fury.
She bursts out laughing and pats him on the thigh. Brittany wanders out of the lift. Tandy smiles flirtatiously.
What's your name again?
It's Clark Baxter. How'd you do?
He sips champagne. She gives him a sultry look and he grins as he lets out a bashful sigh, disturbing the fake moustache. Noticing this, Tandy frowns. Brittany urinates on a lady's red high heels. The PR Nazi pushes through the crowd. Sydney spots Brittany. Sydney and Tandy stand.
Tara, get security. Sydney Young got in.
Who's Sydney Young?
Bouncers approach.
Oh,
Sydney scarpers. The PR Nazi watches hawkishly. Tandy shrugs. Two bouncers give chase, pushing people out of their way.
Plan C. Keep a low profile and leave as unobtrusively as possible.
He takes a running jump and a photographer snaps him mid-flight. How to lose friends and alienate people. The image is flashed across the front page of London Life newspaper, a discarded copy of which lies on a road outside a kebab shop, Kebab Palace. Above the gaudy kebab shop sign are the windows of a flat, the Postmodern Review headquarters. Sydney sits in bed, proudly cutting a photo from a newspaper in which Clint Eastwood has him in a headlock. He hears the phone ringing and staff arguing in the next room.
Can you get that?
Holding a lit cigarette, Sydney strides into his busy living room cum office.
Can you get the phone, please?
My Sue, you're stupid fucking arsehole. I'm going to do the honour of calling it a review. I am an internationally respected academic and...
Prick.
What?
You answer the phone. What do I pay you for?
I am an author...
You don't pay me.
A very well
answer the phone.
Book in the history of culture. I am...
A fuckwit.
No, Postmodern Review.
Sydney, if she doesn't apologise, I'm quitting.
You're going to have to apologise, OK? George can't leave.
Why can't George leave?
Because he owns the fax machine, that's why. What?
It's Sharp's magazine.
A cover of Postmodern Review disparages Sharp's editor.
We're finished.
I'm sorry, George.
We're not finished.
If they sue, we're finished.
Going to be all right. Just give me the phone. Shut up. Be quiet.
He takes the call.
Sydney Young?
This is Clayton Harding, editor of Sharp's magazine.
Ah, Lord Vader.
I saw you at my party just before you ruined it with your little pig stunt.
Oh, you liked that, did you?
Sure. Yeah, I especially liked the part where Clint Eastwood beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, well, you listen to me, okay? I'm not scared of you, Harding, all right? You can sue if you like, but, you know, it's like Jimmy Stewart said, you know?
All right, yeah, you sit up there and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money, but it doesn't, Mr.
Potter.
You know, you can sue us, okay, but I warn you, if you strike me down,
Miss
I will
Taylor's
become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. 100 men will spring up in my place, men who care nothing for success, men who can't be bought, men whose only loyalty...
I want you to come work for me at Sharp's magazine in New York.
The writers have gathered in a frenzy to watch the fight brewing. The woman floors the tubby fax machine owner.
Keep your fucking fax machine!
Can you say that again, please?
An aeroplane roars through a blue sky. Night, the glimmering lights of New York City. Beaming, Sydney sits in the back of a yellow taxi, staring out of the window as he swept through Manhattan.
I see trees of green, red roses too.
He gazes wide-eyed at a sign over the entrance of a theatre, The Late Show with David Letterman. He shakes his head and smiles. The taxi cruises through Chinatown. His smile fades as he sees a helicopter searchlight scouring an adjacent street to the sound of gunshots and police sirens. He presses his lips together anxiously and stares straight ahead. The taxi drops him and his luggage on a grubby street by shops with graffitied shutters. He stares up at a run-down tenement building, then lowers his eyes to see a grimy kebab shop by the name of Kebab Palace. Inside...
Oh, fuck.
This magazine you're working for, it is good?
Yeah, it's Sharp's. You know, Sharp's magazine, sort of
High society, fashion, crime, finance, Hollywood celebrities.
Hollywood? Sodom and Gomorrah. Now everybody is celebrity. You take out your breasts, you're celebrity.
I think it probably depends on the breasts.
In Poland, someone was famous because they done something. Marie Curie. Pope John Paul.
Yeah, well, they don't make entertainers like that anymore, do they?
She slaps him.
Nice guy.
Mrs. Kowalski leads Sydney into his grotty studio apartment.
They brought your things yesterday.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. I like it. Yeah, it's good. I put my drums in the corner over there. It's a joke. They're just little congas.
When you start work?
In the morning.
So you got to be fresh. Make a good impression. Go to bed.
That's exactly what I intend to do.
She leaves with her nose in the air. Sydney does a goofy dance in a nightclub. Tiles on the dance floor light up in shifting patterns as he struts from one disinterested group of girls to another, waving his hands and thrusting his pelvis. He wiggles his backside and leaps about foolishly. Girls retreat from his advances. He flails wildly and stops to find he's cleared the dance floor. He puffs out his cheeks and walks off. The dance floor fills up again. On the street outside, Sydney passes a leggy blonde in a green dress. He glances over his shoulder to see her enter a bar with a red wood-panelled exterior. Turning on his heel, he hastily follows her inside. The blonde heads for the bar. Sydney enters and adjusts his jacket before confidently sidling up beside her.
Kona, please.
Make that two.
Affecting a suave smile, he takes a seat facing her and leans on the bar.
I'm Clark. Clark Baxter. Nice to meet you.
He gags on his drink.
What is this?
That's a water, sir.
Well, that's not right, is it? Put a bit of beer in it or something.
I'm sorry, my boyfriend's sitting there.
Is he? He's fucking small, isn't he?
Sydney turns back to the leggy blonde.
That's his white Russian. He'll be here any second.
Excuse me, can you reserve seats in this bar?
Nope.
Sydney turns his back on the second woman who's pretty with flaxen hair.
I'm a journalist. I work for a little periodical you might have heard of. Sharps Magazine. I'm the cultural editor.
This is a library card from Gloucester.
Don't... Well, it's the wrong one, isn't it? I've got it.
The blonde leaves.
Happy now?
Just doing my bit for the gene pool.
Sydney takes out the newspaper clipping.
Who is that with Clint Eastwood?
Morgan Freeman?
No, in the headlock.
You have this laminated?
He spills her drink.
Sorry.
Oh, no. Just leave it.
It's got... Okay, then.
Her soggy notebook.
It's pronounced Gloucester, by the way.
Are you going to get off of that seat?
No.
Do you know the meaning of karma?
The curry?
What goes around comes around. The moment is approaching where you'll pay the price for being an asshole. And when my boyfriend gets here, I'm going to encourage him to take you outside. Hello? Hi, honey. Oh. All right, I'll see you then.
The woman puts her phone away.
Boyfriend not coming?
She gathers her belongings.
Look, I'm sorry. Okay, do you think...
She glares at him.
Do you think I could have his drink?
Her brow furrows.
Oh, Bobby!
Hey.
Do you want my seat? I'm just leaving.
Oh, thanks.
Bobby, a buxom brunette in a zebra print dress, takes Alison's seat.
Who do you think that is with Clint Eastwood?
Sydney nods, eyebrows raised. Sydney and Bobby dance with gleeful abandon back at Sydney's sparse, undecorated apartment. He dances up behind her, then twirls her around to face him before planting his hands on her hips.
I'm gonna cut part of my nose. Why don't you put on something a little more romantic?
Bobby staggers off into the bedroom. Grinning like a schoolboy, Sydney takes the record from the turntable and flings it over his head. He replaces it. Sydney thrashes out power chords on an invisible guitar. He flails wildly until the record suddenly stops. He turns to the start.
Mrs. Lebowski!
Kowalski! You know what time it is? The music blaring, the door open.
Was it? Fuck. I mean, sorry, shit. I mean, sorry. I ran into an old friend and I brought her back for a little...
Bobby's naked. Sydney points.
Penis!
Mrs. Kowalski slaps him. Ah! They turn to look at Bobby and their eyebrows shoot up in unison. Sydney wakes at 7 a.m. to the sound of his alarm clock. Grimacing, he fumbles around and turns it off. Sunlight streams in through a bedside window. He yanks the cord of his Venetian blind, but it clatters down on top of him and he tumbles from the bed. He cleans his teeth in the bathroom mirror.
You can do this. You can do it.
He spits in the sink.
You can do this. You so can do this.
He sips urine-coloured water from a glass, then spits it out over the mirror. In a grey t-shirt and boxer shorts, he raises a blind in the living room and limbers up.
Come on, Bob. Quick cup of coffee, then you gotta go.
Half asleep under a blanket, Bobby adjusts his genitals. Sydney strolls through Times Square in a t-shirt sporting the legend, Young, Dumb and Full of Cum. Garish billboards compete for attention over a busy New York street. A towering glass-walled office block reaches high into the sky.
This is my city. This is my building.
He enters reception.
This is my lobby.
He collides with an immovable turnstile, then staggers round a partition.
These are my models.
Attractive women dwarf him in an elevator.
This is my workplace.
A petite brunette in a grey suit leads him into a spacious office where a besuited man with shoulder-length silver hair stands at a window, staring out over the city.
And this is my boss.
The man, Clayton Harding, turns to look at him.
What the fuck are you wearing?
Do you like it? I've got a new one, actually.
Sydney reaches into his shoulder bag and proffers a red t-shirt.
Thanks.
Clayton slings it out of an open window.
Sit down. How was your flight?
Yeah, was good. Thanks for the business class tickets, Clay.
That was a mistake. And don't call me Clay.
Oh, we smoke?
We? No.
A postmodern review depicting Clayton as a nude king.
Okay. There was a little... I'm actually a big fan of your early, funnier stuff. Snipe magazine was really good.
Sydney's smile fades as he meets with an indifferent stare.
You've actually been a big influence on me. And I think together we can really inject some of that Snipe spirit into Sharps. You know, I've got some ideas, actually, if you'd like
to. You think you've arrived, don't you? Hate to break it to you, but you're only in the first room. In about a year, maybe longer, you'll discover a secret doorway at the back of the first room. That leads to the second. And in time, if you're lucky, you'll discover another doorway in the back of the second room that leads to the third. There are seven rooms all together. You're in the first. I'm in the seventh. Don't you forget it.
Can I use the bathroom in the seventh? Because the one in the first really smells.
Which leads us to the subject of your sense of humor. I had a look through your magazine here.
Oh, what did you think?
Oh, thought it was kind of snarky and bitter and witless.
Clayton leafs through the offending issue.
I'm going to try you out in the I Spy section. You're going to report to Lawrence Maddox.
Lawrence.
Well, Sydney, I know we've only just met. Already I perceive I'm in the presence of a rare comic sensibility.
Oh, thanks.
Harding, this week to be your rabbi. Show you the ropes.
Oh, Mr. Maddox.
Are you aware of what we do at I Spy?
You photograph famous people when they're drunk.
I Spy. Okay. It's the nation's window into high society.
Thank you.
The looky-loos read us because, well, they weren't there. The glitterati read us because we told them they were there. For the system to work, we have to know where there is.
So when we go out to clubs and stuff, is that on expenses?
This isn't a vacation, it's a vocation.
Doc-suited Lawrence leads him into a private office.
And when we do go out, you're going to have to wear something more suitable.
What do you mean by suitable?
Something that covers all this up.
Sydney glances at his bright red t-shirt and fidgets before pointing at a photograph on the wall.
Is that Mussolini?
No, Sydney. That's Richard Hayward, owner of this magazine.
Oh, he did, isn't he? A bit of a... Who's this funny-looking kid? Is that his son?
That's his daughter, Elizabeth. Now, my wife.
isn't she? She's got... I mean, babies are all like Mussolini, aren't they?
Miss Olsen takes care of book launches, gallery openings, and other intellectual fare. Miss Olsen, would you find our new rookie something to do?
I hear the cultural editor's job's up for grabs.
It's the woman whose drink he spilled in the bar. In an open-plan office, Sydney crosses to Alison and perches on her desk.
Look, seeing as I'm going to be sitting just there, don't you think we should, you know, put last night behind us?
No. Now get off my desk.
Yeah, but I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing.
She works at a computer.
Are you going to help me out?
Sure. Which way did you come in? Here, Crisp Lick exhibition opening. Caption it. Now get off my desk.
A co-worker in a polka dot dress.
Hi. Oh, hi, Ingrid.
Aren't you going to introduce us?
This is Clark Baxter.
It's Sydney, actually. Sydney Young. Clark Baxter's my alias. So.
Why would you need an alias?
He uses it when he's trying to pick up transsexuals.
She frowns.
He's English.
Oh, right.
With a phone to his ear, Sydney pours over a sheet of printed photographic negatives.
Hello.
Hello, is that the Parsons Gallery?
Yes, it is. This is Celia Parsons speaking.
Hi, this is Sydney Young from Sharps Magazine. We're running some photographs from your opening of the Chris Blick exhibition, and I've been asked to caption them. I wonder if you could help me identify a few people.
All right.
Thanks. Chris Blick, man or woman?
What?
Is Chris Blick a man or a woman?
Are you sure you're calling from Sharps Magazine?
Yes, I am.
Well, then tell me, Stanley, why have they given you this assignment if you don't know who one of the most famous artists in America is?
I don't know.
He's a man.
Great. Okay, is he an old man?
He adjusts his specs.
He's an older man, yes.
Because I've got two old men here. Is he the fat one?
You do realize that Clayton Harding is a personal friend of mine.
What's that got to do with anything?
Right.
She hangs up. With the corners of his mouth downturned, he peers at the contact sheet through a magnifying eyeglass to see two portly middle-aged gentlemen holding glasses of wine. He hits redial.
Parsons Gallery?
Is he the one with the wonky eye, then?
He looks at the telephone receiver and frowns. Munching a hamburger, Sydney enters the lobby through a revolving door and gets in the lift. A blonde in an A-line dress joins him. As the doors start to close, she reaches out towards a hastily approaching colleague, but quickly retracts her hand as the doors slam shut.
It's fashion sensitive. If you're not wearing Prada, it'll take your arm clean off.
But I am wearing Prada.
She narrows her eyes disapprovingly and the chrome lift starts its ascent. The doors open and she strides out in a huff to be replaced by Alison, who's wearing a sharp suit. Ignoring Sydney, she opens a book and starts to read.
This place isn't what I expected.
What did you expect?
I don't know, like the Algonquin Circle, Dorothy Parker, you know, martinis, quips. Nobody here's drunk.
It's called being professional. You should try it sometime.
Here's something you've got to understand, okay? I'm not really one of you.
By you, do you mean human?
No, I mean one of the glossy posse. You know, a bunch of zombies writing about, oh, pets of the stars, acting like they're working for the UN. I am here to shake things up.
Tight-lipped, she stares down at her book.
Where are you from?
Not that it's any of your business, but Port Huron, Michigan.
Ah, small tango. I bet you couldn't wait to get out, get anywhere, get all the way to the NYC.
Sign us the lambs. Let me give you a bit of advice, okay? Don't take this celebrity fluff too seriously.
You arrogant...
Alison lowers her eyes as a golden-haired woman in her mid-40s, wearing expensive sunglasses, steps into the lift and turns her back on them. Sydney goes to swallow a mouthful of burger, but gags. A glob of chewed burger shoots out of his mouth and lands with a splat on the back of the woman's cream jacket. Sydney goes to wipe it off, but grabbing his wrist, an incredulous Alison shakes her head. The lift doors open. Sydney and Alison hurry out.
Are you insane? That was Lawrence Maddox's wife, Elizabeth. Her father owns Sharps.
Well, that was her. The Mussolini baby. Well, I could go back.
No, you do not approach Elizabeth Maddox. You do not talk to her. Don't even make eye contact with her. Do you understand?
Well, am I supposed to be afraid?
Yes.
I don't know the meaning of the word fear.
I'm sure there are many words you don't know the meaning of.
What does that mean?
When I think of all the people who have killed to be where you are, you lumber in here, spitting food, haven't got the brains God gave a mollusk. Why did Clayton hire you?
Snipe magazine.
What?
When Clayton left college, he started this magazine called Snipe. It's fantastic. Just took aim at all the self-important celebrities in town. It's completely fearless. It was like my magazine, but 20 years earlier. I am the young Clayton Harding. That's why he hired me. He looks at me, and he sees his glory days.
His glory days?
Yeah.
Sharps has won over 14 national magazine awards and increased its advertising pages by 60% since he took over. He lives in a Bank Street townhouse on weekends in the Hamptons. Clayton Harding is one of the linchpins of the media industrial complex.
Don't worry about that. I think I might just be in time to save him.
He takes a bite of burger. At home.
Hello, you've reached Sidney Young. I'm sorry, but my answering machine is out of order, so the voice you're hearing is actually me. What do you want?
Sidney? Are you there? Sidney? It's your father. If you're there, Sidney, please answer the phone. Sidney? Are you there?
Sidney rolls his eyes as he listens in.
In the cool of the evening.
Night. Sidney gazes out through the window of a sleek black automobile as it glides through Manhattan. He turns, wide-eyed and grinning, to Allison and Lawrence, who indifferently thumb their mobile phones. He looks out on the gaudy lights of Times Square.
Wow, look at that!
Sidney turns to his colleagues.
You two texting each other?
They eyeball him, then look back at their phones. Streaming coloured lights glance off the window as doe-eyed Sidney stares open-mouthed at the passing illuminations.
You always keep me guessing, I never seem to know what you are thinking.
The glowing peaks of skyscrapers gleam in the night sky. White flowers bob on the surface of a rooftop swimming pool as immaculately dressed glitterati mingle and sip champagne. Sidney saunters over to Allison, carrying a plate piled high with finger foods.
There's about 100 grand's worth of food here, and I think I'm the only one eating it. You want some?
No.
Three beautiful women slink by.
This place is just wall-to-wall totty.
Wall-to-wall what?
Totty, you know, babes, sexually attractive women.
Do you mind?
What?
Hey, Lauren.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you.
Look at that. All night long, people have been treating us like royalty. In London, the journalist's motto is everybody hates us and we don't care.
Well, now you're one of the high priests of what's hot and what's not.
I shouldn't even be here. I get thrown out of places like this.
Lawrence walks off into the crowd. Party guests whip out their mobile phones in response to the ringtone. A glamorous woman in her 50s approaches heavy-featured, debonair Lawrence.
Lawrence Maddox, oh my goodness. Long time. You know, it is so funny I should run into you. I've just done this great little film. It's called Five Boroughs. It's low budget, first time director, yeah. But it's really moving. Hey, you know, maybe you could do a little...
Vincent, good to see you.
Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Good to see you, too.
How's the picture?
Pretty close to perfect, if I can just get all the experts to leave me alone. In fact, I'm going to have some screenings next week. You should come by.
Listen. Hey.
That was Rachel Petkoff. Yeah, she's a fantastic actress. She's not done anything for a while, but she was in her day. Got like...
Sure.
No, seriously. I think she's due for a comeback. We should get in there, do a profile before anyone else.
I'd like to introduce you to Vincent Lepak, Enfant Terrible.
Huh.
In my opinion, the most exciting new director in American cinema.
This is the worst fundraiser I've been to in my whole life.
It's a rat fuck, isn't it?
Lawrence drifts off with goateed Vincent. Sidney approaches Rachel, who stands by herself looking out over the city.
Excuse me. Could I have your autograph, please? I'm a huge fan.
She looks at him suspiciously.
Is that so?
Yeah, I've seen everything you've been in. Those episodes of The Love Boat, and The Bionic Woman, and Songbirds. In the Night, and I saw your first ever TV appearance, The Twilight Zone, House of Mirrors.
Right.
Yeah. But my all-time favourite has to be A Day Too Long. You were great on that.
Beaming, she puts down her champagne. Sidney hands her a napkin and a pen.
What's your name, honey?
It's Sidney. Sidney Young.
Sidney Young.
She hands him her autograph.
Thanks.
I'll remember that.
Sidney grins.
Thank you.
He rejoins the others.
I mean, you look around you, and it's all shit, you know? No one's making movies that are fucking worthwhile.
I have to disagree with you, Vincent. You're making movies that are worthwhile.
This is what I'm saying, you know? You have to inspire yourself. I am my role model. I want to be me.
What's the greatest film ever made?
Excuse me?
What is the greatest film ever made? Have a guess.
Well, I don't know. I don't think there is one.
Have a guess.
Yeah, no, have a guess. What's the greatest film ever made?
It's hard to say. I mean, I personally love La Dolce Vita.
Incorrect. Con Air.
I beg your pardon?
Con Air, right? It's got everything, hasn't it? You know, you got Malkovich for your acting chops. You got Nicolas Cage for your action. Steve Buscemi for your comedy. John Cusack for the gaze, right? It's like a smorgasbord, isn't it?
A redhead.
I don't think we've been introduced.
Mr. Young, this is Eleanor Johnson, Queen of New York. Sydney's from England. He's our very own idiot savant, without a savant.
Well, it's always nice to have fresh blood at these things. Which reminds me, I am here with Sophie Mays. I want you to meet her. Her new film, The Making of a Saint. The buzz is amazing.
What are you, a publicist?
I don't really like that word, Sydney.
What do I call you then?
You can call me Eleanor.
All right.
There she is.
Eleanor gestures to a besuited young man on the opposite side of the pool. He dutifully taps Sophie on the shoulder, and she turns to face Eleanor. Sophie is resplendent in a backless white halter neck dress. Sydney's jaw drops. Eleanor waves for her to join them. Standing at the poolside, Sophie looks around for an appropriate route, but is hemmed in by guests absorbed in conversation. Smiling, she scratches her head, then kicks off her glittering high heels before stepping fully clothed into the pool. Photographers take pictures as she lifts her sleek jet black hair over her head and wades gracefully towards Eleanor. Clutching her long hair in a bun, she smiles flirtatiously for the cameras. She pulls herself up out of the water, her wet dress clinging to the sinuous curves of her lean, shapely body. She giggles with a playful Marilyn Monroe-style shrug of her shoulders. Sydney gawks.
This one will go far.
Eleanor speaks on her cell phone as they leave.
Where's the car? What's it doing at the back? Well, forget what I said. I want it at the front now.
I just think it's so awful how we're still exploiting animals, which is why I won't wear fur or leather or wear makeup. I'm a vegetarian.
I'm with you on that one. I won't eat anything with eyebrows. Or something that can chuckle. I would never eat an animal that could chuckle.
I'm sorry, I can't really understand your accent very well.
Oh, it's nothing. That's just... So you're an actress, right? So you've not won any Oscars then?
No.
Because I would definitely vote for you for Best Supporting Dress.
I haven't been nominated for anything.
I realize, I was just saying.
Sophie, dear, are you ready?
Yeah.
No, I was joking, you know, because your dress is on.
Now you know what to do.
Sophie and Eleanor lead the way outside, where a bustling crowd of press photographers vie for Sophie's attention. Grimacing, Sydney shields his eyes from the glare of flashing cameras.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Lawrence drapes a coat over Sophie's shoulders, and they head towards a waiting car.
I'm going to the Circle Club. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, good night.
Sydney tries to squeeze into the car beside Sophie.
Watch out.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the club.
I'm sorry, you're not on the list.
Cuba!
See? Even Cuba says so.
Her chihuahua.
Cuba.
What a good boy.
To the Circle Club.
Oh,
God. It just turns my stomach. Pouring all over it. He's old enough to be a father.
No, he isn't.
Yes, he is.
Actually, I was producing sperm when I was 13.
For your information, he wasn't pawing her. He was just doing his job. In case you haven't noticed, Sharps has to have a star on the cover every month, and most of those stars are Eleanor's clients, so do not piss her off.
She's a flack. Hacks do not take orders from flacks. And I wouldn't call that doing his job, okay? He had no blood left in his upper body.
Would you...
They walk together.
Oh, and the next time you want to do that hilariously ironic I love Con Air skit...
I wasn't being ironic.
Would you mind not doing it in front of Vincent Lepak, who happens to be very important?
Yeah, I could tell that by the way he was allowed to stay up past his bedtime. Do you think she'd go out with me?
Who?
Sophie Mays. Do you think she'd go out with me?
No. Girls like Sophie do not date journalists. As far as she's concerned, you're the help.
Oh, what do you know? Anyway, a lot of these starlets are lonely. You know, all they do is look around for men.
This is New York, Sydney. Women only date men who are successful.
I'm going to be successful.
And tall.
Sydney stops with a frown as Allison strides off. Sydney sits at his computer. A large colour picture of Sophie emerging from the pool adorns the New York Post website.
Have you seen this? She's everywhere.
Lawrence throws him a newspaper.
Great coverage.
A woman delivers a basket of flowers to Lawrence.
From Sophie Mays.
He reads the gift tag.
Thanks for the great night. Sweet kid. Sydney, about last night. Word of advice. Don't talk to the celebrities. Sophie said you made her uncomfortable.
Grey-haired Lawrence gives Sydney a prickly look, then walks away. Allison looks at a tight-lipped Sydney and shrugs. He turns back to his computer. Sydney zips up his fly as he rounds a corner into a white-walled corridor. He sees Elizabeth Maddox approaching and stops anxiously in his tracks. As he starts down the corridor towards her, she stumbles and falls down in a heap in front of him. Allison watches with bated breath from the end of the corridor. Slack-jawed, Sydney gawks at her and she raises her eyebrows. Flustered, he looks down at Elizabeth, then lifts his chin, flutters his eyelids and steps over her. Allison gives him the A-OK and he walks on. In a staff meeting...
So, Brad's people finally got back to me and they've agreed. We have the whole afternoon before the shoot. Good work, Lawrence. Okay, if that's it.
Actually, I was thinking, Clay. Paris Hilton. I do a profile on her as if she's this complete recluse. like a hermit, you know? I'm tracking her down. Who is the elusive Paris Hilton and why is she so publicity shy?
His co-workers look on, stony-faced. He prods Allison's arm.
You know, it's good. Because just changing it.
That's first room stuff, Sydney. And call me Clay one more time, see what happens.
Clayton rises from his seat at the head of the table and walks out. Allison raises a palm to Sydney.
Sorry.
Clayton eats endomami beans and sushi at the desk in his office. He tries to ignore Sydney, who's tapping a notebook with a pen.
If I give you an interview, will you leave me the fuck alone?
He nods.
Bill Nathanson, nice to meet you.
Sydney Young, Sharps Magazine. Huge fan, lovely to meet you. I've just seen the film. Rap Rats.
Good. Did you like it?
I did like it. I liked the hamster thing that you played.
Actually, he's a chipmunk.
Yeah. Now, I've done a bit of research, and I can see that you're quite a private man. Is that right?
Well, I like to keep a line...
Because I think that's great. That's brilliant. But, you know, today, let's get behind the mask.
I don't think there really is a mask as such. Mm. I don't mean to be a pain, but what I really want to talk about today is the new musical.
Yeah.
Keep it about the work, you know. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. First question. Are you Jewish?
Bill's eyes narrow.
I don't see what the relevance of that is.
Well, fine. Second question. The hamster thing that you play in the film.
It's a chipmunk.
Whatever.
Is that gay? It's a chipmunk.
I know, yeah, but is it a gay chipmunk?
Look, it's a kid's cartoon. It's just chipmunk, okay? I don't think chipmunks can be gay.
Okay, all right. So it's straight. It's straight chipmunk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, got that. So...
Bill's expression hardens.
Are you gay?
A sheepish-looking Sydney sits opposite an indignant Clayton.
I was trying to probe.
You want to probe? Become a proctologist.
Sydney's hopeful smile wanes.
You can't ask a musical comedy star whether he's Jewish or gay. From now on, just assume they are all Jewish and all gay, okay?
All right.
Clayton stares at Sydney, who furrows his brow and points at the door. Clayton nods and Sydney leaves. Allison reads as models pick outfits from a rack.
No, I'd love this, but I'm so fat I couldn't. Get out of here.
You look totally Rexy. So
sweet. Sydney plonks himself down beside her and sighs. Allison stares at him.
I don't mean to be rude, Sydney, but what the fuck do you want?
You know how things work here. How am I going to get a piece in the magazine?
I thought all this fluff was beneath you.
It is beneath me, but things have changed.
What's changed?
Well, I know everybody thinks I'm a bit of an idiot, okay? And maybe I didn't have the best start here, but I want to have sex with Sophie Mays before Maddox does.
She scoffs.
You
loathsome. Do you know that?
I know he's got a bit of a head start, but I think I can win her back, you know, because once I get my hooks into a girl, she never gets free.
Like ringworm.
If you like.
She stands up.
Where you going?
She flounces off with her nose in the air. Sydney makes eye contact with Lawrence and waves.
You, buddy. You big corporate dick lick.
A magazine article. Everyone loves a lord. Sydney's nose is taped up like a pig's snout.
Oh, hello. I'd like to apply for a MasterCard, please. Yep. On Sydney Young. On. H-O-N. It's short for honourable. Yeah, it's a British title. The Queen? Yeah, I know the Queen. She used to be my breakdancing posse.
She's a body popper more than anything.
Eleanor and Sophie approach. He tears the tape from his face and hides under his desk.
Well, hello. Cuba.
he likes you.
So, how's it feel to be a star?
Oh, no, don't. It's so embarrassing. God, you know, those pictures are everywhere now, and I had no idea that that dress was so see-through.
Yeah.
Plus, everybody's talking about it like it was some kind of stunt.
Such a cynical age. Hmm? Hello, Sydney.
He emerges from beneath the table with sellotape stuck to his left ear.
Hi. Hi. I was just looking for my, I didn't know you were coming in today.
Lawrence is taking us to lunch at Cipriani.
Ah, that's nice.
Oh, Lawrence, can I leave Cuba here? He doesn't like Italian food.
Oh, of course you can. You can stay in my office. Sydney, fetch Cuba a bowl of water, will you?
Of course.
Sydney frowns and obediently toddles off. He fills a plastic container from a water cooler.
That is a lovely ring. Where is that from?
It was my mother's. She gave it to me.
Oh, you sweetie. That is very, very. So listen. You met Vincent Lepak, haven't you, Sydney?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, he has a new movie coming out soon, and Lawrence is overstretched as it is. How would you like to do the feature on him?
Yeah, I would actually. Yes, I'd like that very much.
Well, great. Maybe we can get together and discuss the angle.
Okay. What do you mean, angle?
Well, I'd need to know how we're going to present Vincent. You know, check the story, so on.
Are you saying you want copy approval?
Any stories written about my clients need to be in their best interest. That's all. I mean, if things work out with Vincent, maybe we can talk about a follow-up story on Sophie.
He stares at Sophie, who's cradling Cuba.
I'm sorry, Eleanor, I don't work that way.
Sydney, dear, think of it like this. You write about one of my clients. You are borrowing some of their starlight to help sell your magazine. All I'm saying is quid pro quo.
Starlight.
He screws up his face. Slighted, Eleanor gives him a piercing look and stomps off. His eyebrows twitch and he looks around. Lawrence and Sophie follow Eleanor from the office. Sydney cautiously opens the door of an office and peers in to see Cuba staring back at him.
Hello, Cuba. Hello. It's Uncle Sydney. Come to see how you are, yes. What's this?
A ball.
Would you like a little play? Would you like a little play?
Would you like a little play?
Fetch! There you go, that's it. That's it. Well done, well done. You and me are going to be pals, aren't we? Yes, we're going to be pals, yes. You're going to like me much, much better than that prick Maddox, aren't you? Yes, you are, yes, you are. Okay, ready? Ready?
He tosses the little red ball, which bounces out through an open window. Cuba scampers after it. Sydney dives for the window and closes it. Cuba hits his little head on the glass and lands unscathed with his tail wagging. Sydney smiles, then looks up to see a large stone ornament wobbling atop a tall unit. Sydney's eyes widen as the weighty polished stone plummets towards the oblivious chihuahua. Splat! Horrified, Sydney bites his fist. He calls an elevator. Alison.
Shit!
She points.
That's my bag.
Yeah, I was going to borrow it for a second.
What are you talking about?
I'll bring it right back. I was just going to borrow it.
They grapple for it.
Oh, my God!
A white paw sticks out.
It was an accident.
What did you do?
I was trying to make friends, and then it was... Don't tell her, OK? Just please don't tell her.
Sophie, Eleanor and Lawrence are in reception.
Oh, look at that.
Sydney runs off. Alison follows to find Sydney leaning out of a window.
What are you doing?
He turns minus the bag.
You just can't...
Alison!
She turns.
Who's in Cuba?
What? Have you seen Sophie's dog?
Oh,
She turns to look at Sydney, who shrugs, arms folded.
No idea.
Well, come and help us find it.
Don't worry, he couldn't have gone too far.
Cuba!
The search party heads off, leaving a relieved Sydney slumped against a wall by the window. Cuba's nose sticks out of the leather handbag as it drifts up behind him on a window cleaner's rising platform. Sydney stands in the doorway of Clayton's office.
Clayton, have you got a minute?
Did you find that rat yet?
No, not yet. It's probably just got out of the building. Congratulations on the man of the year thing. How was lunch?
I don't know. $1,000 a plate, all I could taste was ass. I'm kissing their ass, they're kissing my ass. I get this dream sometimes. Someone's set fire to the building. You know, Haywood, Sharp's magazine, the whole thing up in flames. My analyst, he thinks it's an anxiety dream.
He sips whiskey.
I never let him know how happy I am watching the fucker burn. What do you want?
I want to write a story about Vincent Lepak. Okay, not a puff piece, something funny, with teeth, you know, like Snipe would have done. Everyone's treating him like he's some sort of genius, and he's not, you know, he's an idiot.
Look at these things. How'd they get a closet full of blue fucking shirts?
I don't know.
I don't know either. This is an office, for God's sake. Why have I even got a fucking closet?
He flings the blue shirts onto a desk and peers down his nose at them. He gestures with a raised hand.
Do it.
Do it?
Fuck it, yeah. Do it. He's an annoying little prick. We'll take him down.
Smiling, Clayton strolls up to him.
This is your shot.
Thanks, Clayton.
You're my little hitman.
Yeah, I am your little hitman.
Go do it.
Okay.
Sydney leaves, then steps back in.
Hey, you can call me the Jackal.
Out!
Okay.
Sydney scurries off excitedly. Back at his apartment, he types on a laptop at his coffee table. He smiles as he types the words, self-proclaimed wunderkind, then Lepak, and in brackets, rhymes with hack. Grinning proudly, he scratches his chin and looks down at a pile of magazines on the table. He takes some of Sophie's promotional literature from the pile and regards it with a grimace. Clutching her precious chihuahua, Sophie stares back at him from the page. He dials a number on his cell phone. Night. A van sweeps past the Soho Grand Hotel. Sydney fidgets as he tries to get comfortable on a sofa in the spacious white lobby. The cushion he's sitting on slips forward and he sinks awkwardly into the crack. A tall, slender woman emerges from a lift to find him struggling with the cushion. His shirt and tank top have ridden up unflatteringly. The woman towers over him.
Mr. Young?
Yes?
I'm Sophie May's assistant. I'm afraid Sophie isn't here right now.
Yeah, well, I know she's here, okay? I'm not a stalker. I just know she's upset because she lost her dog.
She isn't here.
All right, well, can you please just find out if she got my present?
Okay, Did you send the flowers?
Flowers? Yeah, because she doesn't get enough flowers, does she? I sent the fish.
Oh.
You know, goldfish in a bowl. Did she get them?
Yes, but they were dead.
Sydney's eyes widen.
All of them?
Yeah, it was kind of shocking, actually. Were they dead when you sent them?
What do you... No, no! Who sends people dead fish?
She shrugs.
The Mafia?
Sydney plonks the fishbowl down on the bar.
Oh my God! You're like a serial killer.
No. That wasn't me. Look, I laid him to rest. Cuba. I took him out to the,
I
just don't want to tell you.
I
you might not want your bag back.
Oh, stop.
stop.
Sorry. Also, just the whole, you know, not telling him thing. I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate that because you didn't have to do it and a lot of people probably wouldn't have done it, but why didn't you?
You don't need my help to screw up here, Sydney. I mean, the only thing you make are mistakes. And stains.
The barman.
Can I help you?
Oh, just a couple of straws, please.
She stifles a self-conscious smile.
Hey, listen, let me ask you, what is it with this book? You're always sort of writing in it, and what is it, like a diary? Am I in it?
It's a novel I'm working on. All right.
Wow.
Yeah, go ahead. I know, I'm a walking
cliché. No, not at all. That's very impressive. And you're writing that by hand?
Yeah. It's... I don't know, it keeps it separate from the magazine work. It makes it seem special.
You're full of surprises, sister. White Russian. Are you waiting for your boyfriend?
Yeah, he'll be here soon, so...
What does he do, this mystery guy? Is he like a hack too? Or...
Actually, he's a poet.
Oh, is he? What does he look like?
What?
Well, you know, I mean, poets are not known for being that good looking, you know, because they're always in dark rooms and they look like Gollum and he's probably...
He's very handsome. Okay. Thank you.
Of course he is.
You know what I don't understand? You're so desperate to get a story in the magazine, so why wouldn't you play ball with Eleanor? Write the puff piece.
Well, I resent being bribed to gush sycophantically about a star. I choose to gush sycophantically.
Okay.
Anyway, Clayton's given me a story, so I'm on my way.
Well, that's good.
On a TV.
In a world where passion is forbidden and belief divine, the love she withheld from a man, she gave to all mankind.
You've given yourself to Christ, my child.
But I love him. How can I be wrong?
I believe in love. That is all we have. And we must give it wherever it is most needed.
Sometimes, before you can find God, you have to find the world.
Calcutta.
Stand up, Mother Teresa.
Sophie Mays is Mother Teresa in The Making of a Saint. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Allison's eyes are downcast.
Anyway, I better shoot off. I'll leave you in peace with your poet.
He comes back for the fishbowl.
I've still got the receipt, sir.
He heads off. Allison stares down sadly at an untouched glass of White Russian. Clayton presides over a staff meeting.
Which makes it a half a page left. Lawrence, any ideas?
Yeah. Rachel Petkoff. Fabulous 70s actress. One of my all-time favorites. Just made a movie called Five Burrows. I think she's poised for a comeback, and I think we should get there first. Do a piece.
Sounds good. Let's do it. Okay, that's it, people.
Sydney's irked.
Clayton.
What?
Did you read my piece on Vincent Lepak?
What? Oh, yeah, that's not gonna work.
Oh, and for those of you who haven't heard, Allison will be running the I Spy section from now on, as Lawrence here is moving up in the world. He's replacing Greg Roberts as deputy editor.
Sydney scowls as Lawrence basks in the adulation of his colleagues. Sydney catches up with him outside the meeting.
Congratulations. Hey, I'm sorry, Rachel Petkoff is one of your favorite actresses. You've never fucking heard of her. That was my idea.
Well, so it was, yes. If you have any more good ideas, don't forget to bring them by my new office.
He grins broadly, then heads off before turning back heavy-browed.
By the way, there have been complaints about you skulking around the water cooler, trying to talk to women. It's inappropriate behavior.
What? You spend your life chatting up the staff.
When I do it, it's called flirting. When you do it, it's called sexual harassment. Consider this an official warning. I will not tolerate sexist behavior.
Sydney screws up his face. Lawrence gives him a jaunty nod and saunters off. Looking smug, Lawrence takes a seat behind his desk to address his underlings.
I know that wasn't Greg's way of working, but Greg isn't deputy editor anymore. I am. And I'm making changes. What?
Hi, Lawrence. There's a lady here that's been looking for you.
A blonde.
Can I help you?
Are you Lawrence Maddox, the new deputy editor?
Yes?
I'm here to congratulate you on your promotion.
Thank you. I'm sorry, you are...
I'm your present.
She strips and dances.
Lawrence, this is inappropriate behaviour, wouldn't you say?
This is wrong. I should record this.
Such a misuse of company time.
Sydney, stop. Oh, I'm not doing anything.
Holy Christ!
Hey, Mrs. Harding.
Oh, hi, Ingrid.
Oh, my God, so adorable.
This is Ingrid from the fashion department.
You're getting so big.
Where's Mr. Maddox now?
Oh, he moved to room 217. It's just over there.
Oh, okay.
Bye.
Bye. Come on, girls. Let's go see Mr. Maddox.
My God! My Lord above! This is terrible!
Oh, good Lord!
Ho, ho, ho! The stripper reveals a penis. It's Bob.
Wow!
Mrs. Harding and her two young daughters.
Mrs. Harding. Girls.
Bobby.
What?
Sydney quickly cups Bobby's dangling penis. A stern-faced receptionist stares at Sydney, who sits outside Clayton's office, obsessively scrubbing his hand with a tissue.
I've got a cock on my hand.
The receptionist frowns. Sydney looks in at Eleanor and Clayton, who stand at a desk discussing an A3 mock-up of a potential magazine cover. Eleanor exits and walks uneasily past Sydney. Clayton looms large in the doorway.
Get in.
Sydney skulks into the office with his head hung low. He sits as Clayton paces.
I didn't know it was Take Our Daughters to Work Day. I didn't know there was a Take Our Daughters to Work Day.
Shut up.
He's behind Sydney.
You know, when I told my wife I'd hired another Brit, she was excited. She still thinks you're all like something out of Pride and Prejudice.
But after what she just saw in that room, now she thinks you're a British person born in New Jersey.
He walks round to face him.
Why did I hire you?
I don't know. Why did you hire me?
I had an attack of nostalgia, but it's passed. Like gas.
What was wrong with my story?
What?
Why did you kill my Vincent LePack story?
Sydney, it wasn't good enough. Simple as that. It
wasn't good enough.
We don't do hatchet jobs here.
Come on, it wasn't a hatchet job.
Your opening quotation. It's only too easy to catch people's attention by doing something worse than anyone else has dared do it before. Who are you thinking of here, yourself or Vincent?
He is a talentless, pretentious little twat who thinks that cinema began with Tarantino and somebody needed to say that. You told me to do something with Steve.
I am trying to run a fucking magazine here.
A free press is the last defense against the tyranny of stupidity.
Save me your tin pot philosophy.
It's not mine, it's yours. First issue of Snipe.
Would you grow the fuck up? You are not Robin Hood. You never were. You bitch about famous people for the same reason I used to bitch about them. Because they got invited to the party and you didn't. Well, Sydney, you're at the party now. Quit your bitching and do your fucking job. You're on your last life here. Do you understand that? One more fuck up like today, you are gone.
Sydney looks him in the eye.
When you have to run a decision like that past Eleanor first.
Clayton stares coldly.
Get out.
Clayton turns away in his high-backed swivel chair as Sydney lopes out with his tail between his legs. Seated party guests eat under white marquees on the lawn outside Clayton's sprawling mansion.
I can't believe you hired Bob as a stripper.
I didn't hire him, she did it as a favour.
I thought you wanted to be a success here.
I do. It wasn't me, it was Clark.
Oh, your alias, right.
I don't think Clayton's going to publish anything I write, you know. I've been on salary for 4 months now, and I've written probably 175 words. I think dollar per word basis, I am the highest paid writer in the history of this magazine.
He's not going to renew my contract.
Well, what do you expect? I mean, Vincent's one of Eleanor's clients. I told you they're untouchables.
I just thought Clayton was different, you know, I really did. The only thing I'm good at is pissing people off, and he won't even let me do that. My glory walks hand in hand with my doom.
Alison's puzzled.
Troy.
Troy who?
Troy the movie. Clayton only invited me here so I could be shunned. Everybody hates me. You're the only one that will talk to me.
You cornered me.
I'm serious. You want the drink?
Yeah, I'll have a half a lager.
Sydney rises from the table and lets his hand linger on Alison's shoulder before sauntering away. Alison looks behind her, then she too rises from the table. Sydney, dressed in long shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, spots Sophie approach Lawrence.
Sophie, darling. Ravishing as ever.
Sydney joins Lawrence and Sophie.
We were just talking. Did you all know that Lawrence published a book of poetry?
No.
Called The Hollow Heart.
You write poems?
In another lifetime. Dabble.
Cointreau?
Oh, right here. Thank you.
And The White Russian. Right here.
Sydney gulps.
Well, well. It isn't silly.
So what time does the stripper come on?
Glowering.
Shut up, Maddox.
Sydney lopes off.
Where's your sense of humor, Sydney?
Lawrence stands with Allison, playfully tossing nuts into his mouth. Sydney spies on them from behind a bush.
Choke. 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 Choke.
Hi, Mrs. Harding.
He waves to her daughters.
Hi.
How's it? Lovely party.
Happy Fourth.
A bearded man with long grey hair.
Jesus!
Has anyone ever told you before that you have an unusually dark aura?
Yes.
You should walk with bare feet as much as possible. Ground all that negative energy.
Nonplussed.
What are you, a wizard or what?
I'm a spiritual healer.
Oh, can you make a living out of that?
God, no. I'm a dentist. You want to do some coke?
Sydney ponders. Dusk, a live jazz band plays as guests chat. Yankee Doodle riding on a pony. A beer bottle emerges over the railing of the bandstand. Drunk, Sydney climbs up onto the railing behind the band and addresses the crowd with his arms held high.
Engelad, Engelad, Engelad! Engelad, Engelad, Engelad! Engelad, oi! Orlando! You used to be English. Engelad, Engelad, Engelad! Engelad, Engelad!
He falls.
Ow.
The guests resume their conversations. Sydney limps up to Allison, who sits alone in the half light with a bottle of wine in her lap, gently rocking on a swing.
You okay?
What?
I said, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. You?
Yeah. No, actually, I'm not. I hate my life, so you know I'm gonna get drunk.
Right, well, I'll see you then.
He skulks off, then races back, gesticulating wildly.
How could you?
What?
How the... You and Maddox having an affair! For Christ's sake! The man with Hidden Shallows! I used to think... When I met you, I thought you were a bit of a pain, but I was really thinking... God damn it, Maddox! How can you live with yourself?
I couldn't. That's why I've broken up with him.
That's no... You broke up with him?
Allison strides off tearfully, leaving a dumbstruck Sydney staring after her. She quickly returns.
Which leg did you hurt?
This one.
She kicks it.
God! Fuck! God!
He slumps down on the rope swing, then falls backwards onto the grass. Shimmering lights play on the rippling surface of a swimming pool. Sydney lies on his belly by the water's edge. Sophie's reflection appears like a mirage on the water, and he rolls over to look up at her.
You know what? There's something very damaged about you.
She kneels down beside him.
Like an animal that's been hit by a car or something. Like a deer or... like a pig, maybe. And they walk all funny and... the other animals keep away from them.
She lies down beside him on her belly.
Little... limpy pig.
She rolls onto her back and moves closer to him. She stares up at the stars.
I'm drawn to sick animals. That's why I picked Cuba. Because he had, psychological problems.
Sydney bites his bottom lip.
Poor little Cuba. Where is he now? Oh, Jesus, I'm wasted. Are you wasted? Because I'm really wasted.
I slept it off. Congratulations on becoming incredibly famous, by the way.
Thanks.
What's that like?
Weird. it's all happening so fast, and it sort of feels like it has nothing to do with me. Kind of like I'm not really even here.
Smiling, she turned her head to look at Sydney, who lies on his side, gazing at her. Dappled by a pale, shifting light, she looks back up at the stars.
You know what would be nice, though? Some coke. It's probably just as well I don't have any, though. Coke always makes me so horny.
Sydney springs to his feet and races off through the party.
Wizard! I need the wizard dentist! I need the wizard! Not you, the dentist wizard! The wizard, have you seen him? He's like a wizard stroke dentist! Get it!
Okay, all right, you got it!
Thank you! Thank you so much!
It's okay.
The man hands Sydney a small Ziploc bag of white powder.
I will never, never, never forget this.
It's okay, really.
Sydney runs off. Alison is bent over, drunkenly failing to unlock her car door.
What are you doing?
None of your business.
You can't drive like that, okay? Go just sleep it off.
Firstly, you are a stupid asshole and I hate you. And secondly...
Okay.
You're a stupid asshole.
Look, if you drive in this condition, you are going to kill yourself, okay?
I don't care if I did. I hate my life. Oh, I gotta go.
Come on, come here.
No, don't touch me. I hate rental cars. I hate them. No, give me the keys. I gotta go home.
Holding Alison upright, Sydney gazes over at Sophie kneeling by the pool. Sydney drives with Alison in the passenger seat.
I thought I had it all figured out. Hey, get the hell out of Port Huron. Come to New York. B, do the serious journalism thing to pay the bills while I, you know, write the novel. C, win the Pulitzer. E.
D.
D. I don't know what D was. Then I took the internship at Sharps and I met Maddox. And then, before you know it, I'm writing 10 tips with a fucking metrosexual and pretending this is what I wanted, and that's why I hated you.
I know you hated me.
You were right about me. I'm a ghoul writing fluff.
No, you're not a ghoul, okay? You're a zombie.
A ghoul is like a ghost.
I need a cigarette. For my cigarette.
You don't smoke.
Yeah.
They drive on down a dark stretch of road.
When I told him I couldn't see him anymore, I don't know if he cared. I love him, and I don't know if he cares.
She presses her lips together, stifling tears.
Look, I'm sure he does. Yeah, okay, he's probably just not very good at expressing his emotions. Okay, well, let's just calm down, okay? Then don't get snot everywhere, because it's a rental.
Oh, God.
What?
She vomits.
Oh! Oh, that's grim!
Alison slung over Sydney's shoulder.
No more stairs, no.
Will you shut up? You're going to wake the old witch up.
Mrs. Kowalski.
Why are we stopping?
Hi. Did we wake you?
God, I'm a whore.
Hello, Dad.
Sydney sits in his apartment with his bespectacled father and Mrs. Kowalski. Wearing Sydney's jacket, Alison puts a song on in his bedroom.
Actually a prostitute.
Oh, good.
Mrs. Kowalski gives Alison a sideways look as she dances out to join them.
So, Sydney's dead. It's nice to meet you. I'm Alison.
Delighted to meet you.
I'm from Port Huron.
Port Huron.
And you must be Sydney's mommy.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. I mean, my dad remarried too, so that's cool. Where are my cigarettes? What is this?
The bag of white powder.
Oh. Hey, is this?
I think it's probably cocaine. It wasn't actually for me. I was going to give it to this young actress.
Alison joins them on the sofa.
So, Mr. Sydney, what you doing here?
Oh, but please call me Richard.
Richard.
Well, I've written a little book, and so I'm doing some talks.
time writing a book. Yeah. What's yours about?
I write books on philosophy.
Philosophy?
Ideas.
Oh, my God. Richard Young? You're R.C. Young? You never said your dad was R.C. Young.
Well, I brought you a copy of the book, Sydney. I'd love to hear what you think.
Oh, but Sydney, not about philosophy.
Well, he does have a master's in the subject.
You're shitting me. He likes Con Air.
She covers her mouth.
Oh, I don't feel very good.
Come on. Time you were in bed.
Okay.
You can slip on the couch. It was a pleasure to meet you, Lord Young.
Balding, brown-suited Richard stands as Mrs. Kowalski leads Alison to Sydney's bedroom. Sydney washes up as his father returns a framed portrait photo of a woman to a shelf.
You really should have said you were coming.
That would have required you answering one of my calls.
Yeah, well, I've been kind of busy.
Of course. Yes, I picked up your magazine at the airport. Most enjoyable. I particularly liked the young Hollywood actress who said she would like to start her theatre career somewhere small, like London or England.
Why must you always do this?
But it's just a little joke.
Well, no, it's not a little joke, is it? It's basically what you're saying is what I do is worthless.
I don't think it's worthless. I just think that you know in your heart that you could be doing more with your life.
More? Sharp's magazine is one of the most respected magazines in the world. There's a million hacks that would give anything to be where I am. Do you know who I hung out with just today? Orlando Bloom.
Richard looks blank.
I don't know who that is.
No, of course you don't know who that is. You don't know who anyone is. You thought Brad Pitt was a cave in Yorkshire? The thing is, most people do know who that is. All right, and most people wouldn't think a journalist hanging out with celebrities like that was a disappointment.
I don't think you're a disappointment, Sydney. I've never thought that.
Richard sidles up behind him at the sink.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you.
Richard goes to put a hand on Sydney's shoulder, but can't bring himself to do it. He turns away.
Things haven't been that great, actually, Dad. I don't know why, I can't seem to get ahead.
If you're not happy...
No, I'm fine. Really, I can make it, I know I can.
Richard puts a copy of his book down on the table.
Einstein said, try not to become a man of success, but rather to become a man of value. Young lady in the bedroom there, Alison, she wouldn't have anything to do with your desire to stay on, would she?
No, we're just friends. Anyway, she says that New York women don't go for losers.
I suppose not. But Alison is from Port Huron, isn't she?
Sydney stares solemnly at his father, then reluctantly cracks a smile. Sydney opens the bedroom door. Leaning his head against the doorframe, he peers into the dark room, where Alison lies sleeping. He smiles fondly. She stirs. Sydney's eyes dart left and right as he retreats from the room. The sun shines on Sydney's red brick building. He's in the kitchen making a fry-up. Alison comes in wearing his oversized pajamas.
I don't remember much from last night, but I'm so, so sorry.
Why? No, are you all right?
God, your father. And that woman.
Mrs. Kowalski. Don't worry about it. The last woman she caught me with had a penis. So, you know, you're a big step up.
Thanks.
Rubbing her neck, she looks at the black and white photo Richard was inspecting.
Who's that?
That's my mother.
No way. Is she a model?
Actress.
Is she still...
No, she died when I was young.
He turns back to the stove and continues to cook.
Must be pretty cool having your mom in the movie.
Well, I used to see her on the TV from time to time when I was growing up. You know, just kind of weird.
Alison sits at the table.
Okay, full English fryer. Perfect hangover cure.
She looks at the bacon, sausage, egg, tomatoes, beans and toast.
Huh?
Not again.
She runs off with a hand over her mouth. Sydney plumps a cushion on his leather sofa and takes his father's book from the coffee table. In doing so, he knocks Alison's handbag to the floor. As he picks it up, the contents tumble out and he scrabbles to collect them. He picks up Alison's red notebook. It's embossed with a gold image of a butterfly. He glances about furtively, then opens it and starts to read. He looks up again to find Alison watching him.
Hi. I was just, you know, just rooting through your personal possessions.
She shrugs and takes a seat.
I like the opening.
You do?
Yeah. Can I read the rest of it? Believe it or not, I am a pretty good editor.
I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to bother finishing it.
Hey, keep true to the dreams of thy youth.
Is that Troy again?
It's Schiller.
She starts to gather her things from the coffee table.
I'm going to jump in the shower and then I really will get out of your hair.
Well, wait, because I got you a present. I was walking past this record shop in the corner and I saw it and I thought, you know, it might cheer you up.
The soundtrack to La Dolce Vita.
You said it was your favourite film, so...
That is... I don't even know what to say.
Holding the record, she looks up with a smile.
I don't have a turntable.
Oh, well, you could always come around here and listen to it.
He takes the battered record sleeve from her. She closes her eyes and smiles as he puts the record on. Wearing a wry smile, Sydney starts to dance. He turns and offers Alison his hand.
Are you kidding? I could throw up on you again.
Oh, come on. No!
There we go.
They dance.
Come on. Don't be shy. I'm a great mover.
Sydney's pretty mother seems to watch from the photograph on the shelving unit as Alison cracks a smile and dances a cheeky little jive with Sydney. He takes her by the hand and raises it above his head. The music drifts out through the open window. Nestled between lush green trees and other crumbling apartment blocks, Sydney's building is dwarfed by the skyscrapers on the horizon. Alison sits at her desk as Ingrid goes through dresses with another model.
Hey, Alice. Versace. You like?
I'm good, thanks.
You know, honey, everybody needs to change their look every now and then. Especially when they have a new man in their lives.
What? I'm... What are you talking about?
Well, that English guy is always hanging around you these days, right?
Oh. Tell me it isn't so. Of course not. Thank God. Can you imagine? He's such a creep. This is gorgeous, but I'm just too fat.
Don't be crazy. Alice, is Anna fat?
Not at all. Why, she's so thin I could just take her little spindly body and snap her over my knee like a dry fucking twig. And, for your information, Sidney Young has more going for him than anyone in this place.
Sidney listens at the door. Hearing Alison cross the office, he darts for a fire exit, setting off the alarm. He closes the door and turns back. A crowd of office workers convenes and stares at him. He taps the sign on the door.
It works. That's good.
He takes a wildlife book from a shelving unit.
Elephants.
The crowd disperses, but Alison remains. She watches him head off. Into his bathroom mirror.
Hey, Alison. Oh, I was wondering if... Hey, Alison. I was wondering maybe if you wanted to go and see a movie or have a meal.
He sticks some fake fangs in.
Do you want to go on a date?
He wrinkles his nose.
Might work.
A poster reads, Sharps, come as your favourite dead celebrity party. Sydney, dressed as Dracula with white face paint, fangs and a cape, carries a glass of wine as he boogies over to Eleanor, who's dressed as Marlene Dietrich. She stands chatting with a black-clad Vincent. She eyes him.
Hello, Sydney.
I like your costume, Vincent.
I'm not wearing a costume.
Oh.
Sydney walks away.
Idiot.
Wanker.
And Elvis kisses a nun. Sydney heads over to Alison, who wears a black wig and holds a cigarette in a long holder.
Better go find
that.
Okay, I'll see you.
See
ya.
Clara Bow.
Louise Brooks.
Ah.
Bella Lugosi.
George Hamilton.
George Hamilton's not dead.
Isn't he? That's a shame.
I was looking for you, actually. There's something I wanted to tell you.
Me first. I wanted to ask if maybe you wanted to go and maybe go see a movie or go have some meat.
What? I can't understand what you're saying.
I'm sorry.
He removes the fangs.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to ask if... Back in a minute.
Lawrence gives her a glass of champagne, then kisses her on the cheek and walks away. Sydney shifts uncomfortably.
I wanted to tell you that, Lawrence has left his wife. We're gonna be together. Officially.
Ah, that's brilliant.
He shakes his head.
So maybe he does care after all, right?
Yeah.
They sip their drinks and stare straight ahead. Sydney looks at Alison and sighs. She looks at the floor.
I'm going to...
He raises his glass, then turns away, popping the fangs back in his mouth as he makes his way through the crowd. Alison has her back to him. A morose Sydney sits alone at a table, his goblet-like glass in front of him. Vincent and Eleanor sit in the back of a car.
Yeah, and take the West Side Highway, please.
Eleanor! Wait!
Eleanor winds the window down.
Let me write the profile on Vincent.
I don't think so.
You can have complete copy approval. It'll be like you wrote it.
Eleanor traps his fingers in the window.
Vincent, think about it. Okay, think about how humiliating it'll be for me. Please, I am begging you.
You,
Vincent leans forward.
You don't look like you're begging.
Defeated, Sydney steps back from the car window and knits his hands together by his chin. Drenched by the rain, he stares at them with pleading eyes.
West Side Highway, please!
The window glides up and Eleanor smiles at the driver. The car pulls away, leaving a dispirited Sydney crouched at the roadside with his hands clasped together as if in prayer. His long cape hangs in a puddle on the pavement. He looks up at an electronic billboard from which Sophie stares at him. She blows a kiss. Breathing heavily, he hangs his head as the rain beats down on the dark street. In Clayton's office...
Sit down, Sydney. Lawrence Maddox is no longer working for Sharp's magazine. Seems that Elizabeth got tired of him screwing around and kicked him out.
She kicked him out?
Richard Haywood doesn't seem to like the idea of employing an ex-son-in-law. So he's gone. So is Allison Olson. Don't worry about Maddox. He's already lined up something with Gotham Magazine. I'm going to need somebody to hold the fort at I Spy. Strictly on a temporary basis, you understand. Oh, one more thing. I had a call from Eleanor Johnson this morning wanting to know if you would like to write a profile on Vincent Lepak.
Sydney smiles.
I don't know how you did it, Sydney, but somehow you've made it to the next room.
Dressed in a sharp pinstripe suit and dark glasses, Sydney sits opposite Vincent in a sushi bar, avidly taking notes and smiling enthusiastically at Vincent's comments. Eleanor goes through Sydney's article with a red pen, editing out the part she doesn't like. She hands it back to him, and he nods with a grateful smile as he looks it over. Sydney stands behind Eleanor and a dark-haired woman as they airbrush Vincent's publicity photographs on a computer. They digitally remove a pimple. Sydney takes a copy of Sharp's magazine from a news kiosk on a street corner. He flips through it to find his article. Vincent Lepak, Long Live the King, by Sydney Young. A broad smile spreads over Sydney's face. Sydney works at his computer in an office of his own. Over time, it fills up with various gift baskets. A female property agent shows Sydney around a spacious apartment. Someone hands Sydney a gift-wrapped box at his desk. He opens it to reveal an Omega Speedmaster watch. He takes off his old watch and flings it. Sydney's name is ticked on a number of guest lists. Getting on like a house on fire, Sydney and Clayton share a joke in the lift. Wearing a white robe, Sydney sits in the steam room. A wide smile plays on his lips. Alison reads an article on Sydney in a magazine. She's sitting at a restaurant table. On it is a white Russian cocktail. Lawrence joins her.
Hey.
He reads over her shoulder.
Well, well. Little Siddeley. Listen, I can't stay. Anderson wants me to go to some photographer's exhibition. Hot new talent, blah, blah, blah.
How hot is she?
Who?
The talent.
Lawrence removes his arm from round her shoulder, picks up his drink, and takes a sip.
I'll see you back home. Could you stop carrying this book around? It's kind of embarrassing.
As he walks away, Alison glances down at her novel and frowns. The exterior of Sydney's apartment building. Inside. Wearing a stripy robe, Sydney opens his door.
Hey.
Hey.
Nice robe.
Oh, thanks. Ralph Lauren. It was a gift.
Who from?
Ralph Lauren. I was doing a piece and...
Oh, I wanted to say congratulations. I heard about your promotion. I'm really happy for you.
Well, yeah, thanks. How's things going with you?
Good, fine. Everything's... I'm working for this little literary magazine. It's not the New Yorker, but... So I left you a bunch of messages.
Yeah, I know. I've been so busy.
Yeah, just... I thought so.
Alison nods.
Okay, well...
How's the novel going?
Oh, I'm still working on it.
Well, you should keep at it, you know. I believe in you. I never gave you these.
Alison throws her head back with a sigh as he fetches some documents.
What is that?
Notes on Alison's novel.
It's just, you know, you don't have to use them if you don't want.
You don't even look at it.
You know, Sydney?
Ingrid slinks out in her bra and knickers.
Oh, hey, Alice.
Alison waves. Lean, shapely Ingrid pads off.
Where did it all go so wrong?
Alison looks him in the eye.
Bye.
Seated in a restaurant...
Sophie is going to get an Apollo Film Awards nomination for Best Actress.
Wow! That's great! But the nominations haven't been announced yet.
That is correct. Which is why we have absolutely no way of knowing whether or not she will be nominated. But when she is nominated, we would like Sharps to do a feature. Someone to cover the whole lead-up. Unrestricted access. The trajectory. The building of this unique brand.
I'm gonna have a logo.
So here's the deal. Sophie wants you to write the story.
Sydney's mouth hangs open.
You can be my bitch.
Merry Christmas, Sydney. This is a cover story. I think a little celebration is in order.
Chin chin. Baby, we can make it all right.
Night. A snow-dusted black limousine draws up outside a club. A man opens the car door for Sophie, who climbs out onto the street wearing a floaty pink dress and a light pashmina. She poses for press photographers, then heads for the entrance to the Circle Club, followed by Eleanor and Sydney. They enter the venue ahead of a long queue and leave their coats in the cloakroom. On an ornately curlicued balcony, they look out over the dance floor, where men in suits and women in evening dresses dance beneath glass chandeliers. Sophie and Eleanor leave Sydney alone on the balcony. He strikes up a conversation with a leggy blonde. Sydney boogies on the dance floor with the happy golden-haired woman who bounces around joyfully as a smiling Sydney jives. Sophie cuts in and the blonde turns her back. Smiling suggestively, Sophie wraps her arms around Sydney and they dance. They brush noses and she caresses his neck. Sydney gazes at her lustfully. Day. Images from a moving car. Tall palm trees rush by, silhouetted against a cloudless blue sky. Signs read, Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Sunset Plaza, Tiffany, Whiskey a Go-Go. The limo sweeps down a main road. A billboard sports an image of a pouting Sophie wearing a nun's habit. Sophie Mays and Teresa, the making of a saint. Night. Stripped to his socks and boxer shorts, a terrified Sydney tries to gather the courage to leap between two high hotel balconies. He hops back down from the railing.
Down. You couldn't do it. It's bloody highs.
The hotel room's filled with the young, affluent and beautiful. Sophie unzips her blue dress and lets it fall to the floor. She hands Sydney her bottle of beer as she strides out onto the balcony in her bra and knickers. The guests rush over to the adjacent balcony to watch. Yeah! Smiling victoriously, Sophie stalks back into the room from the adjacent balcony.
What are you?
Limpy Pig.
What?
I'm your little Limpy Pig.
That's right, Limpy Pig. Now it's time to pay the forfeit. What do you got?
I've got my little Limpy Pig dance.
Reluctantly, he wrinkles his nose and snorts like a pig, hopping from one foot to the other with his limp wrists held up to his chest.
Give me your ring.
I can't.
Come on.
No, I can't.
Give me your ring. I want it.
I can't.
Okay. If you give me your ring and I win tomorrow, I'll let you have sex with me.
No longer wearing the ring, a morose and drunken Sydney sits alone in his hotel room, drinking whiskey at the foot of the bed and half watching a monster movie on TV. He flicks through the channels.
It has left Rocky wondering where the others have gone. His old anxieties about being left alone resurfaced.
Now, there's an easy way to remember everything.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
I'll buy you a better one, just as soon as I...
No, you won't. I'm always going to keep this one. I'll never part with it. Never, never, never.
It's his mum. He drops the remote control and looks down at his bare hand.
Let's do it properly. Please.
The handsome, brill-creamed gent in the 50s movie slides an engagement ring onto Sydney's mum's finger, and she gazes love-struck into his eyes. Sydney's transfixed. A sleek black sedan draws up by a fountain outside the 53rd Annual Apollo Awards. Sophie, Eleanor and Sydney get out and head down the red carpet towards the entrance. Sophie wears gold earrings, an ostentatious white fur stole, and a long, flowing red dress. Inside, she does an interview for the cameras.
What people don't realize is that all saints start out as human beings, and all human beings fall in love at some point, right? Mother Teresa still has their man.
Sure.
Well, anyway, Tasso.
Sydney stands waiting nearby. Lawrence approaches.
Well, well. Look at you. All the way to the seventh room. Congratulations. Wheel of Fortune, right? You go up, I go down. So here with Sophie. How about doing your old rabbi a favor and putting in a good word for me? Make a little interview.
Is Allison here?
Allison? No. We went our separate ways. Actually, she left me. She tells me she's in love with someone else. Nope. Not you, I'm afraid, Siddeley. Some guy named Clark. Can you believe it? These are the sacrifices we make. I don't need to tell you. This isn't a vacation, it's a vocation. So listen, not Sophie. Maybe a little interview. It won't take long.
Sydney's eyes rove in thought as the penny drops. He sits beside Sophie in the award ceremony.
So here I am, at the center of everything. I've got the tux, I've got the watch, I've got the life. I am exactly where I wanted to be.
The woman on stage announces the winner, Sophie Mays.
I've made it to Shangri-La.
He looks up from his seat to see that Sophie's wearing his mother's ring. He lowers his eyes and sighs deeply. The crowd applauds as Sophie makes for the stage. He runs up behind her.
I'm going to have the ring back, okay?
What are you doing?
I need to give me the ring back.
Hey, away from me.
Give me the ring back. Look, my mother gave me this ring and she told me to give it to the one. She's not the one.
You lost your mind.
Look, just...
No,
just
let me go.
I don't want to be on the inside. I don't want to be at the party. I don't want to have sex with you. I killed Cuba!
Sophie charges. She pins him on a table and they grapple and fall to the floor covered in food. Clayton watches. She slaps him.
This is lying!
Richard watches on a hotel room TV.
We have certainly never seen anything quite like this before at the Apollo Film Awards.
Mrs. Kowalski, the magazine model, sees Sophie kick Sydney.
I've just been informed that the young man involved in the altercation is Sydney Young, reporter with Sharks Magazine.
Allison chuckles to herself as she watches the debacle in a bar. Sydney floors Sophie and springs up to his feet. Eleanor's being restrained.
You're first! You're first!
He runs off.
Hey, Vincent.
Sydney.
Bouncers approach. Sydney stomps Vincent's dark glasses underfoot.
Fuck! Ah!
Vincent shields his eyes from the light. Sydney races out through the doorway. Clayton bursts out laughing, then sharply resumes a serious look. Sydney races outside, where his escape is blocked by a crowd of fans and photographers amassed behind a red rope cordon. Sydney looks defeated. Then a young guy lifts the cordon. The bespectacled, mop-haired guy nods for Sydney to pass, and he does, racing off through the crowd. He approaches a pretty, flame-haired flight desk attendant at LAX Airport.
Have a nice flight.
I need a ticket to New York, please.
The next available flight isn't until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. It arrives in New York at 6:30 p.m. local time.
Well, there's nothing sooner.
No, I'm afraid not.
Fine, I'll take it.
Hi, you've reached Allison. Please leave a message. Oh, and Joe, if that's you, I got the tickets for Empire Park tomorrow. I'll see you there. Bye.
Allison, it's me, it's Sydney. Listen, my battery is very low, and can I see you? I don't think I'm going to be working for Sharps anymore, okay? But it's fine, because I thought I wanted all that stuff, you know? I thought I wanted to be special and have the money and be treated differently to everybody else. Can I get an upgrade? But I don't, okay? And who's Joe?
He glares at his mobile, then looks up to see himself on a TV mounted to a pillar nearby. On screen, Sophie dives on Sydney, pinning him to a table. A close-up shows them grappling on the floor. The uniformed redhead at the desk smiles at him.
Can I get your autograph?
What, because I'm on the TV? Because I'm up there close to the movie stars, because you think I'm special?
For your credit card?
He smiles blankly at her.
Yes.
Then obliges.
Do you have any baggage?
Plenty.
Looking bedraggled in his ruffled mess of a suit, Sydney sits alone in the departure lounge, impatiently tapping his hand with his mobile phone. A burly guy in a yellow baseball cap, grey jacket and jeans pushes a floor buffer past behind him. Sydney looks at the gold ring in his palm. It sports a spiralling, helical pattern. He closes his hand around it and stares off thoughtfully. Night. An aeroplane lands on a light-studded runway. A yellow taxi drives through the streets of New York. Seated in the back of the taxi, Sydney clutches the ring. His eyes dart around pensively. He looks out through the window to see La Dolce Vita playing at an open-air cinema screening.
Stop the car!
He runs past a sandwich board that reads, Empire Park Screening, Sunday 7 p.m, Fellini's La Dolce Vita. He wanders onto the park, where people are seated in deck chairs and on blankets, staring up at the movie. Sydney searches for Allison in the crowd. On screen, a man rides on a woman's back. He staggers around, looking left and right, then stops to stare up a grassy incline. His face lights up as he sees Allison reclining on a blanket beside a man and a woman. Allison leans in and talks to the man with an air of familiarity. Sydney's face drops and his shoulders sink. The other woman hugs the man and they cozy up together. Sydney's smile returns and he hurries up the slope towards them. Allison squints up at him.
Hi.
Hi.
She smiles and he looks around awkwardly.
How's the novel coming along?
She picks up her notebook and hands it to him.
It's finished.
She looks on as he leafs through it.
Thanks for the ending.
They smile at each other. He tosses the book down on the blanket and offers a hand. She takes it and rises to her feet. They stand hand in hand facing each other, just inches apart. She smiles and they share a passionate kiss. As they kiss, he secretly takes the ring from his trouser pocket and puts it in the pocket of her floaty, pale blue floral dress. They share a look, then turn to face the screen. A dance sequence begins. Sydney and Allison start to jive. He twirls her round slowly, and they shuffle back and forth to the music. The lights of Manhattan Bridge stretch towards the glimmering city on the horizon. Sydney looks down at the blanket. Allison's notebook lies on top of a lit candle. It catches fire. He dives for it.
Oh, fuck!
ITFC audio description written and read by Sam Clark.
You really got me going. You got me so.
Directed by Robert B. Wide. Produced by Stephen Woolley and Elizabeth Carlson. Written by Peter Storm. Based on the book by Toby Young. Co-producers, Lolly Borg, Toby Young. Executive producer, Tessa Ross. Line producer, Richard Hewitt.
Oh, yeah.
Cast in order of appearance. Young Sydney, Kellen Pannell. Sydney's mother, Jeanette Scott. Sydney Young, Simon Pegg. Sophie Mays, Megan Fox. Eleanor Johnson, Gillian Anderson. Apollo Awards presenter, Kelly Jo Charge. Apollo Awards guest, Christian Smith. PR woman, Catherine Parkinson. Clipboard Nazi, Felicity Montague. Herself, Tandy Newton. Assistant hotel manager, John Lightbody. Postmodern review staff, Ian Bonar, James Corden, Vanilla Woolgar, Chris O'Dowd, Hugh Thompson, Emily Thorne. A spoof trailer for Sophie's film, An Outline of Christ, Oblivious Pictures.
Mother Superior, this is Agnes from the Ottoman Empire.
Sometimes, before you can find belief, you have to find someone who will believe in you.
They say you traveled alone. You came by train?
By foot. That is not a suitable way for a young lady to travel. It is how the poor must travel.
Sometimes, what is so wrong,
you left this,
can feel so right.
Oi, stop it!
You've given yourself to Christ.
But I love him. How can I be wrong?
Why?
I was told to come here.
Who told you?
Religious paintings and stained glass.
God. The faith is strong in this one.
I believe in love. That is all we have. And we must give it wherever it is most needed. Calcutta.
Sometimes, before you can find God, you have to find yourself.
Stand up, Mother Teresa.
In a world where passion is forbidden and belief is divine, one woman achieved everything by helping those who had nothing. Sir Ben Queensley, Dame Peggy Aitken, Todd Rivera, and introducing Sophie Mays, Teresa, the making of a saint. A Mel Cohen film, rated NC-17.
Clayton Harding, Jeff Bridges. Clayton's assistant, Michael Brown. Mrs. Kowalski, Miriam Margolis. Woman in bar, Natalie Cox. Alison Olsen, Kirsten Dunst. Barman, Sam Douglas. Bobby, Charlotte Devaney. Sharp's assistant, Gillian King. Florence Maddox, Danny Houston. Ingrid, Margot Stilley. Anna, Isabella Calthorpe. Elizabeth Maddox, Hannah Waddingham. Rachel Petkoff, Diana Kent. Vincent Lepak, Max Minghella. Maddox's assistant, Emily Denniston. Vicky, Ashley Medequo. Sophie May's assistant, Lisa McAllister. Mother Superior, trailer, Julia West. Nun, trailer, Brona C. Titley. Young Priest, trailer, Charles de Bromhead. Mrs. Harding, Jane Perry. Harding Children, Connie Wheeler, Laura Edmonds. July 4th party guests, Alan Lidkey, Robert Wide. July 4th party waiter, Nathan Nolan. Wizard, dentist, Andy Lucas. Richard Young, Bill Patterson. Nightclub girl, Alexandra Aitken. Flight desk attendant, Sarah Mennell. Couple on blanket, Lyatt Barrack, Ivan Carlson. While this motion picture is loosely inspired by real characters and historical events, certain characters have been changed, composited, or invented, and a number of incidents fictionalized. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United Kingdom and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The Crossed Fingers logo of UK Film Council, lottery funded. Film 4.